Welcome to today's edition of Bob's Radio Journal Podcast.
Hi, folks. How are you? This is Bob Anderson coming to you from the beautiful Laurel Highlands here in Pennsylvania. You're connected to Bob's Radio Journal Podcast, bringing you clean, uplifting entertainment, news, and talk.
It's been over 6 years since the horrific attacks of September 11th, but federal officials remain in an almost frantic effort to stop the next incredible attack. Award-winning journalist Ronald Kessler, chief Washington correspondent of Newsmax, details for the first time how the government has been attempting to prevent the next 9/11 in his latest, read like a thriller, The Terrorist Watch, Inside the Desperate Race to Stop the Next Attack. Listen now to Mr. Kessler being interviewed by National Public Radio.
In a new book, writer and reporter Ronald Kessler chronicles what he describes as the silent battle against terrorism and the unsung heroes who've helped prevent another attack on America. The Terrorist Watch also has its villains, many members of Congress and much of the media who, Kessler says, undercut and belittle those efforts. The book describes how counterterrorism changed at the FBI and the CIA since 9/11, including debates over harsh interrogation techniques that many regard as torture. Ronald Kessler has been kind enough to join us here today in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for that very nice introduction.
And the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, General Michael Hayden, testified on Capitol Hill yesterday. He's also testifying today in closed-door hearings with House Intelligence Committees and Senate Intelligence Committees about those destroyed CIA tapes. In this case, your book looks prescient. You have arguments on both sides from CIA people who say these harsh techniques have been both productive and had to be used, and from FBI officials who said, look, we've never believed in these techniques. Softly, softly is the approach to take it, and it's always worked for us.
You know, I think they're both right, because the CIA usually does use these soft techniques, and the FBI always does, and they are very effective in most cases. The issue is, in this particular situation, when waterboarding was used on three terrorists and has not been used since 2003, there was a fear of a second wave of attacks. This was coming from al-Qaeda. And these particular people, including the architect of the 9/11 plot, were not cooperating. And so it was thought that it was just essential to get that information at that point using a technique that is used against our own soldiers when we're during training. Our own special forces are trained in waterboarding and subjected to waterboarding. So it's not torture in the sense of inflicting pain. It is a very harsh technique. It's scary, especially if you really think you're going to be
drowned.
Yeah. But of course, now because the media leaks, all the terrorists know.
Media didn't leak. The media printed the leak.
Exactly. So now the terrorists know they're not going to be drowned. So, you know, it's very unlikely to be used again. But if there's a situation where we think there might be a major attack, even a nuclear attack, which is what al-Qaeda wants to do, we still need to preserve that option in a few cases. And Congress recognized that last year when they passed a law which specifically addressed interrogation and did not outlaw this technique.
What did you make of the interviews that were given earlier this week by John Kiriakou, a former CIA interrogator who worked in Pakistan, was part of the interrogation team that questioned Abu Zubaydah, one of the people who was waterboarded in 2002. And he said, you know, it probably saved lives, but he also said, yeah, it's torture, and Americans should be better than that.
And he said it was necessary. And, of course, he didn't have firsthand knowledge any more than you or I do. He was not actually there. You know, I respect the people on the other side, including a lot of FBI people, who say, no, it's against our values. No, it should never be used, even if we think a nuclear attack is going to take place. But I think they're wrong, and I think, you know, when you talk about American values, what kind of values do we have when we're willing to risk literally millions of deaths of our own Americans, certainly hundreds of thousands of deaths, rather than waterboard an individual where he wakes up the next morning feeling perfectly fine? To me, you know, you just have to balance those issues. And when it comes to the larger war on terror. Since 9/11, we've rolled up some 5,000 terrorists worldwide, both the FBI and the CIA. It's a headline you'll never see in the Washington Post or the New York Times. It's the major reason we have not been attacked. You know, a lot of people think it's luck or Al-Qaeda doesn't care anymore. Al-Qaeda cares, as we saw with the plot blow up 9 airliners across the Atlantic. And they're trying all the time. We are rolling up plots all the time. A lot of them never are about to take place because we've already rolled up those terrorists. But every few months, you'll see arrests by the FBI, for example, of terrorists. A lot of times, it's buried at the back of the pages of the newspapers. But that is the real silent war that is going on behind the scenes. And I was able to get access to a remarkable degree to that silent war.
And I want to ask you about it in just a minute, but I do want to go back to the waterboarding one more time. And that's to bring up the case of Senator John McCain, somebody who underwent torture at the hands of the North Vietnamese for years when he was a prisoner of war in North Vietnam, and who says, we can't do this.
You know, honestly, I don't think that the fact that he was, you know, tortured, and he really was tortured, the way Saddam used to torture people by really inflicting pain. I don't really think that gives him any special expertise in the subject. I mean, it's a question of balancing our desire to preserve our country, which is what they want to get rid of. It's a war of survival versus, a technique that is used against our own soldiers during their training. So, you know, I think we can all make our own decisions. And as I say, I respect people on the other side. But to me, the most important thing is preserving this country and, you know, certainly not violating civil liberties. When you look at all the measures that have been taken to stop...
There are those who would disagree on that point.
Well, when you look at all the measures that have been used to stop the terrorist attacks, and it's so hard to begin with, including the NSA intercepts, the Patriot Act, and many other measures, I would claim that not one abuse has in fact been found. An abuse meaning an illegal act or some improper or using some improper means or motive, which is what used to happen under J. Edgar Hoover. And I've written about that extensively. I also wrote a book which led to the dismissal of William Sessions as FBI director over his abuses. So I'm very comfortable exposing abuses, real abuses. But the fact is, the courts have not stopped any of these measures. Congress has not stopped any of these measures. In fact, they've adopted them and enacted them into law. So these are things that, for all the hoopla and all the back and forth and all the, what I would say is distortions in the press that give people the wrong picture, the fact is that no real abuse has been found.
And let me talk for a moment. You did get some extraordinary access to people and places most of us are not familiar with. In fact, very few of us are familiar with. And one of them is the National Counterterrorism Center, the NCTC, which is an unusual building. And one of the things that you say is most unusual about it, both the CIA and the FBI are sitting in the same room with no wall between them.
You know, you'll still see in the press that the FBI and the CIA don't talk to each other. The FBI has this culture of just arresting people, doesn't care about developing sources. Well, at the National Counterterrorism Center in McLean, Virginia, some 200 FBI analysts and 200 CIA analysts sit side by side 24 hours a day sharing information and parsing out leads. They also have three times a day a national video conference, a secure video conference among the different agencies where, again, they share information. So it's quite different from what you see in the media. And these are all some of the reasons why we have not been attacked. And yet all these people get is demonization in the press, second guessing. In the case of waterboarding, Congress was informed about it at the time. The White House and Justice Department all approved of it. What is going to happen the next time when there's a fear of a nuclear attack or a biological attack? There's a belief that some one individual has that information that might stop the plot. Is a CIA officer going to engage in waterboarding or some other technique that has been approved by Congress and approved by the White House and approved by the Justice Department, given the fact that, of course, they worry about their own legal liability? So that's the real danger now, that we're going to be so complacent that we're going to go back to the pre-9/11 thinking and start taking away the tools that we need to protect ourselves.
Again, but some would also argue that the United States has lost the moral high ground around the world and exposed its forces to waterboarding, which a lot of people regard as torture, when they're taken overseas, simple retaliation.
Well, first of all, you know, long before the Iraq War, we were attacked on 9/11. Long before the Iraq War, the other side was not only torturing our people, but decapitating them. So it's not a, you know, there is no relationship there. I do agree that the Iraq War has become one of the propaganda tools that has helped al-Qaeda. I absolutely agree with that. On the other hand, Saddam's own generals thought that he had weapons of mass destruction. So how could you get behind that? And in this book, I interviewed George Pirro, an FBI agent, who debriefed Saddam Hussein for seven months and was so successful that at the end, Saddam teared up when they parted. And Saddam admitted that, yes, he was bluffing about WMD, but on the other hand, he said that he planned to resume his WMD program within a year when he thought sanctions would be lifted, in part because he was paying off UN officials, and he said he planned to develop a nuclear device. Now, is that something we want? I don't think, even in retrospect, that's something that we want to take a chance on.
Where our guest is Ronald Kessler. His new book, The Terrorist Watch, Inside the Desperate Race to Stop the Next Attack. And this is Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's get Andy on the line. Andy's calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that, with all respect to your guest, I feel that the perception that the United States is a nation that condones torture is hurting our interests and is causing people in other countries to look badly at the United States. And I understand the point that, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, but I think that there's a public perception issue that basically the rest of the world doesn't trust us. And I think that I wonder what your guest would have to say about that.
Well, I think that's a very perceptively worded question. I agree that it certainly feeds into some negative thoughts about the America. On the other hand, all these countries just can't wait to come here, including the Arab countries. They would, you know, they would love to immigrate here. And when they look at us objectively, we are a wonderful country. If the press were more honest about reporting this, then I think, you know, the rest of the world might get a slightly different impression. If the press, you know, pointed out in the very beginning of their stories, as I would have done back when I was at the Washington Post and Wall Street Journal eons ago, because it was a different era in journalism then. It was the Watergate period, and I think journalism was done in a very honest way then these stories would point out very early on that, in fact, we have not used waterboarding since 2003, that, in fact, it was only used on three people, and that our own special forces are subjected to waterboarding. So how bad can that be? How, you know, should the rest of the world think we're terrible because our own special forces are subjected to waterboarding? If those points were made, which I make in this book, I think you might see that we wouldn't be demonized quite as much as perhaps we are.
Okay. Then I wonder if, I mean, you say that it's an issue of the media not reporting all the information, and I wonder if part of that is, I don't know how much the media actually knew about this situation, and I wonder if there needs to be better communication from the White House and from the particularly from the government to the media to communicate this, because it's something that I wasn't aware of, you know, the issue that waterboarding is something that's done to our own soldiers as part of their training. You know, I didn't know about that, and maybe it's just...
We've talked about it on this program and talked to some people who've experienced it on this program, and they do say that, you know, it does make a difference if you know it's being done by your own side, and they are likely to stop before they do drown you. So
well, that's why people have to, A, buy this book, and B, listen to NPR. But you know, when stories are done routinely in the press about the subject, they should say what you just were surprised to hear. And they're not. And, you know, yes, the agencies try to get the word out. And, yes, the White House tries to say these things. But usually it's ignored. I mean, I don't think they're perfect either. I think the White House, you know, has not had a very open press policy. It's trying to improve. And that has been one of the problems. But, you know, there's this basic idea, well, Bush does is bad, and therefore we have to show that it's bad.
Thanks very much for the call, Andy. Let's see if we get John on the line. John's calling us from San Antonio in Texas.
Yes, thank you very much for taking the call. By the way, I just wanted to say, Neil, that I think Mr. Kessler is being very disingenuous with these broad generalizations like, well, the reason we haven't been attacked is that, you know, implying that's because of the torch or the waterboarding, the fact that we can use those things that's kept us safe. I think I don't know why we haven't been attacked, but because our borders are very porous. You've seen recently that people were doing testing, going through airports and seeing what kind of contraband that they could get through, and they got through like 75% of whatever they were trying to get through. I mean, I think we've just gotten lucky in that regard, and I think for him to say something like, well, John McCain, you know, yeah, he was tortured, but he's not really a good person to, of course, I'm generalizing, he's not really a good, he's not qualified to make the call. In a sense, that's what Mr. Kessler is saying.
Well, I think Mr. Kessler's point is that luck is the residue of design, that all the work that these agents at the FBI and the CIA and other agencies have done to try to prevent attacks, sometimes there's one story you tell about a cell phone that was dropped in a car and picked up by police in Torrance, California, that led to an unraveling of a plot. And lucky, but yeah, sure, it was also good work.
Well, you know, in our lives, we always experience luck and the person, Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the telephone, you know, had luck when he invented that. It always helps. But no, the fact is that, first of all, when it came to waterboarding, it led to plots, real plots being rolled up, real terrorists being rolled up, definitely saving thousands of lives. 5,000 terrorists rolled up since 9/11. That's a fact. Obviously, those are plots that never got hatched. Every few months, FBI announces these arrests. When the FBI announced the arrest of people who wanted to blow up JFK Airport, New York Times buried that story on page A37 as if it was, you know, trivial. On page one was a story about a guy who maintains violins in a museum in Italy. That's the kind of, you know, sort of head in the sand thinking that's going on. And what is going on behind the scenes is secret. And so that is part of the problem, to be sure. But these people are working day and night to protect us. And that is why we have not been attacked.
Ronald Kessler tells their story in The Terrorist Watch, Inside the Desperate Race to Stop the Next Attack. He was kind enough to be with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Neil.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.
That's this week on Bob's Radio Journal. Thanks for listening.